news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Lex Podcast, episode 14, Married Movie Reviews, part 4. I'm Lex, and sitting across from me, directly across from me, is my wife, Latasha, who can't stop giggling.
It's a symptom of being really tired.
It's 7:25.
I've been saying
we're
way
old,
too late
but we're not that
week.
Old. Good lord. Okay. All right. So
I'm not directly across from you. I'm sitting like I think the term is kitty corner.
The way I'm faced, it doesn't matter. All right. So we have a couple things to go over before we get into the movie reviews. Number one, you have come up with an idea. So why don't you explain this idea to the listeners about how they can participate in future episodes of Married Movie Reviews.
We started doing this with the intention of watching all the current movies that come into our theater because, as we've stated before, it's now a membership theater. So, similar to Netflix, we pay one amount at the beginning of the month and then we can see as many movies as we want throughout the month. So we've made it a mission to watch everything that our theater gets so that we can do these reviews. I was thinking that it might be kind of interesting, if not fun, to watch older movies. And I'm not saying older as in, you know, black and white stuff, but, you know, things that have come out within the last few years that people maybe want to hear our take on or have us review. So it's just something that I, you know, suggested that maybe we could get people's input that, hey, I'd love to have you guys review this movie. And well, especially since some of the movies we're watching are, you know, sequels, might be, you know, maybe people want to hear our review of the, you know, first one or
the
whatever.
The way that you explained it to me was that basically it sounded like each week would have a stipulation. Like,
oh, well, yeah, do, like, you know, this week, a comedy. What comedy do you guys want us to review? And then, which horror film do you want us to review? Or even going further than that, you know, to do review a film by this specific director. Something like that, just to kind of change things up a bit. Because the things we've been getting in our theater are a little bit of a mixture of stuff. You know, like, this week we had an action, and then a summer blockbuster, as well as a horror-ish. So, you know, that would just be a way to...
Okay, so what's the stipulation this week, then?
Because of the movies we've seen this week, why don't we say comedy movie?
Any comedy movie.
Any comedy movie that, you know, has obviously not anything that's come out in 2014. So, 2013 or older...
Okay.
Comedy.
So it's a pretty broad...
Yeah, and again, like, I'm not saying my definition of older is not, you know, like the Three Stooges, necessarily.
Why don't we put a cap on it? Why don't we put 1950 to...
I mean, we could even just say something, anything from 2000 to 2013. That way it's
well,
newer.
Let's not box people in too much.
Okay.
Stipulation is, you're going to send in your suggestions. Stipulation is, we have to be able to get a hold of it without... spending too much money on it, because quite honestly, you know, we're not going to go buy a $20 to $30 DVD just to review one film, you know, one off or whatever. We're not rich like that, so it's got to be either on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Instant Prime, Redbox. Yeah, exactly. There may be some other ways we can get to films, but we won't discuss that right now on the podcast. But okay, so that's the stipulation, a comedy from 1950 to 2013, any comedy, you put your suggestions in, we will draw them from a hat, I will literally draw them out of a hat, and we will do it that way, just so everything's fair, there will be no special treatment on how these are picked, so that's the first announcement. Second announcement is we're adding a new segment to the show, and the new segment is called Trailer Talk, because we see a lot of trailers. We see more trailers than we do movies.
Yep, because every movie I've noticed has an average of, I'd say, 3.
Yeah. So, basically, what we're going to do with Trailer Talk is the way we have it structured right now, and this may change later, is that basically we're going to talk about, you know, maybe a trailer that it doesn't have to necessarily interest us, like, oh, I really want to see that movie. It could be something that we've seen 1,000 times over and just want to get it off our chest. It could be something that just looks really bad, or, you know, something that just looks really good, or something that a lot of people are talking about, but basically newer trailers that have come out. So in the past few weeks, has there been one trailer or a few trailers that have, like, struck you as special in any way, or just really bad, or something you've seen over and over again that you just want to say?
I'm glad that Guardians of the Galaxy are finally going to be in theaters.
You stole
I'm
mine.
I'm kind of sick of that trailer.
Yeah.
Not because I think the movie's going to be bad necessarily or anything like that, but it's
we've
like,
seen
I'm
a lot
it.
Of it.
I'm over it.
We've probably seen it over a dozen times.
Easily.
From the movies that we've been to already. I've seen... I think you figured it out the other day how many movies I've seen, how many movies you've seen since, I guess, June, start of June. And this trailer has been attached to probably 80% of those films. So we've seen it a lot. We've seen it, you know, elsewhere. So I'm with you. I'm happy to see it... finally in. We don't have to watch the trailer anymore because this movie had a huge marketing budget, so of course we're going to see it 1,000 times over.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. But I saw a trailer today. It just came out today. And I don't think you've seen it yet. For the new SpongeBob SquarePants movie. Now, the first movie was a cartoon movie. This movie is going to be half cartoon, half live action.
And talking like Space Jam style, so it's going to be people with the little cartoon
not
dude,
quite
or...
no and right now we're actually going to break. I'm going to show you the trailer and I'm going to get your live reaction to it. I don't think it's on Hulu. We're gonna have to look it up online.
Okay,
so we'll watch the trailer and then we'll come back with your thoughts on it, and then you know, maybe this will be the format going forward as you suggested. So
aight.
Okay, so we just watched the trailer for SpongeBob SquarePants Out of Water. That's coming, and you have a disgusted look on your face. What?
I'd call it a scowl. What the fuck?
What?
SpongeBob is a cartoon. He is not a claymation thingy bobber that suddenly has muscles and walks. That was weird.
Well,
I'm not impressed.
In the grand scope of SpongeBob, weird is a common theme. I don't know. I thought the animation of them out of water was interesting. Because it's not claymation, it's computer animation.
It's like a cartoon version of CGI. It's weird.
It's almost as if they were toys.
Yeah. It was. I mean, it looked cool, but like... the knowledge that SpongeBob is a cartoon.
What about from a kid's perspective? Does this
look I don't know. Let's ask the 5-year-old.
Well, I don't think he's ready for trailer talk yet. So. Is there any other trailers that you've had on your mind or have heard about? Or to break the silence here, I watched something. It was put on Facebook by the Tosh.0 page, and it's this girl reacting to the 50 Shades of Grey trailer.
Blah.
And it's hilarious.
Is it?
Because she's it might be fake or whatever, like she might be just doing it as a gag or whatever. Mm-hmm. But she's just like squealing like, "Oh my god, the interview." Or, "Oh my god, his hands." Or yeah.
Oh, wow.
He has an Irish accent, even though I didn't hear an Irish accent.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. And the actor is not American.
Right. Oh, the mask! Or, you know, and she's this larger woman and she's getting hysterical over it. But it was funny because that trailer was shown at The Purge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so out of place.
And so it was kind of like... I mean, people were reacting to it, but you couldn't really tell how their reaction was because the loudness of the trailer mixed with everybody's reactions and stuff like that. And I had girls, like teenage girls, sitting in my row, and I could...
I'm sorry.
They were, like, reacting to it, and it was just so funny because it looks so... It doesn't look like anything special at all.
See, and okay, so 50 Shades of Grey is a... It's about to be a film that's based on a book from a few years ago.
A book series.
Yeah, I guess there's 3 books in total. But the thing that, like, I don't know if people realize, the premise of this book started out as Twilight fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
With Edward and Bella, only this time around, Bella is this awkward, you know, clumsy person, and Edward is this dominant person, and they're supposed to enter into, like, this kinky sexual relationship that's dominant, submissive, and literally the only thing she did was change the names, and, like, piss poor writing and this and that. She's basically...
Have you read the books?
I read them this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Because...
So that's where you were.
All of my friends at work have been like, oh my god, the trailer's out, oh my god, I can't wait to see it. So I was like, all right, I have not read it. I think the first one came out in like 2011. So I put it off for quite a while. Holy hell, it's horrible. Like, I'm expecting it to be, like, sure, there's kinky sex in there and everything, but I'm expecting it to be, like, really, really horrible. But it also makes me wonder, what the hell is this movie going to be about?
Like, I think you answered your own question.
But, like, any sex scene I've ever seen in a movie is, you know, you see the silhouette of the people, or you see a close-up of a shoulder, or, you know, a hip.
You're
or
a very sheltered like person then.
No, I'm just saying in, like, mainstream movie and stuff like that. Right. Like, of course there's, you know, you see some full frontal for the woman or whatever like that, but the acts that are described in the book, there's
I'm
no
sure
way
they're not going
to
put everything
because
in.
This is not a porno.
Right.
So it just makes me very curious to know how that's going to translate, but I mean, the book was horrible, so I don't know that this movie's going to be any good, and I'm actually, like, angry that we're going to have to watch it and talk about it.
Yeah, we get to watch it.
Get to? Look at you. So, anyway.
Okay, we do have, I did ask for questions, kind of last minute thing on Facebook, and we got one, so that was cool. Antonio wants to know, what movie are you looking forward to the most coming up here?
Ooh.
So I'll go first. For me, Turtles. I think that's Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
Turtles, you know what? I'm here or there, you know, it's whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I know that it could be horrible. I know that it could be very bad. I don't know what the runtime is yet on it, but it better not be as long as Transformers was. But I think Dumb and Dumber is probably the most anticipated because I do want to see if they keep that.
I kind of forgot that one was coming out.
If I want to see if they keep that tone that they had back in about 20 years ago.
Right.
Because I think that's very essential to the film. Now, I'm hit or miss with these guys, the Farrelly brothers. I love Dumb and Dumber. I love Kingpin, which is a very underrated movie. And by the way, I don't have that movie, and I went to look at it on Amazon to see where I could get it, how much it was. People are charging like $30 or $40 for the DVD.
Oh, wow.
So it must have been a limited run or something. I don't know. But I like that a lot. But I didn't like There's Something About Mary. Me, Myself, and Irene was okay.
Did you not like the story itself, or did you not like Cameron Diaz?
I don't like Cameron Diaz, but I didn't care for the story itself either. So... and I know that a lot of people do like that, so that's, you know, that's that. But, so, you know, I'm wondering if they've gotten so far away from that that, you know, it's no longer going to be like it was.
Yeah.
Which, I've watched Dumb and Dumber so many times over that it's ridiculous. There was a string 2 years ago, where our son Dexter and I watched it like every single night for a month or two straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those films I can watch over and over and over again. So, the trailer was okay. It was funny.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were kind of like, well, that's not, you know, that's a lot raunchy. I talked to Cousin Ryan. I just decided to call him Cousin Ryan now because I talk about him on the videos, you know, the Yard Sale Adventures and now this. So I just call him Cousin Ryan.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, exactly. And and so I talked to him about it, and he's like, I don't know, there's a lot of, like, disgusting stuff in there. And I said, well, you know, there's some disgusting stuff in the original, too.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about Harry, you know, shitting his brains out on the toilet and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... You know, it's not out of touch for these guys. But let me run down the films real quick. And I think they definitely get worse as they went along from the Farrelly brothers. After Dumb and Dumber, it was Kingpin. Then they had There's Something About Mary, Me, Myself, and Irene, Osmosis Jones, Shallow Hal, which I like Shallow Hal a little bit, Stuck on You, which I don't think I ever saw, Fever Pitch, Heartbreak Kid, Hall Pass, Three Stooges, and then Dumb and Dumber is their next film. So, you know, there's a few gems in there, like really good movies, but I'll stop talking about it now. But, you know, Dumb and Dumber is something I'm very interested to see how it's changed along with their style and along with the times and all that stuff. So what's the one movie that you're really looking forward to? I mean, sure, you're looking forward to a couple films, but the number one film.
Mockingjay Part 1 in November.
Which, for people who don't know, is?
That is the third film for the Hunger Games franchise. Hunger Games, Hunger Games Catching Fire, there will be Mockingjay Part 1, and then a year from November, there will be Mockingjay Part 2. Because just like a lot of other book movie adaptations lately, they've decided to split the final one into two films.
And why not? They can make money off of it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm looking forward to. There have been a couple of teaser trailers out lately. And then the first full-on trailer was just recently released with Comic-Con crowd. So that's been, you know, broadcast out. So my inner nerd, which isn't really too inner, is getting a lot more excited.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, this seems like a fad to me, the whole book to movie.
It's picking up.
Well, I was shocked that it started in the first place, because I didn't know kids read. I honestly didn't know that they read. Of course, it's mainly women who are at these midnight launches, and not exclusively, but majority-wise, that's what it is. And so they're seeing, usually girls are a little bit more intellectual than guys in school, right? They'll sit down and read a book, whereas guys normally won't do that.
I love your stereotyping. It's so adorable.
Well, but it's true, though. It's stereotyping, but it's true. I mean, you went to school, you know.
I did.
Exactly. So, I mean, again, I'm surprised that girls even read books still. Because, I mean, books seem antiquated when you think about it. Like, okay, yeah, there's Kindles and there's iPhones and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. But, I mean, these books are actually selling. Like,
yeah.
The honest-to-goodness physical things are selling. So, does this have a limit? Or do you think this will continue to go? Are we in for another 25, 30 years of
movies? If you look at a bookstore, everything that they have there, you know, they've got their classic section.
These are usually made for teens, the books, the movies.
The ones that they're adapting now are mostly the YA or young adult fiction stuff. So a lot of dystopia, a lot of paranormal.
Even 50 Shades of Grey, which isn't a kid's book, is mainly read by teenage girls, I would say.
It's targeted for my age range.
Yeah, and there's a lot
of consenting adult range.
There's a lot of moms and stuff like that, too. But, I mean, there are a lot of, as I said.
But what I'm getting at is if you walk into Barnes & Noble, the books that they have there are just a small fraction of all the books that exist. And if you think about how many books exist and how many potential movies could be made from that, like, there's no, you know, I commented last time on, you know, part three that Hollywood's running out of ideas. So, like, that is a good way to do it. If they can't come up with an original idea for a film, that's why we're getting so many comic book movies. That's why we're
so
getting
so many authors now. Are authors now screenwriters by default?
I wouldn't say by default, but I'm sure that there are some that, you know, like, there are books that I've read, been like, I could totally see this as a movie.
Because you said yourself that the 50 Shades of Grey book is terrible.
I don't know how the hell that became so popular.
Is it because of the sexual content? Is it because...
I don't know. People, I mean, it's no good.
Is it people... Okay, let me ask this. Is it people who are afraid to go to porn sites feel a bit better about themselves by reading a book like this and get their jollies off that way? Is that what that...
I was almost expecting to be turned on reading this book, and I was not, though. Hmm. So maybe I just have different ideas from other... But, you know, for the sheltered housewife who, you know, doesn't... I don't know. It's just... Maybe for some people it was more than enough, but it's just... Seriously, it's like a 13-year-old wrote it. The character says, "Oh my," every other sentence, and she talks about her inner goddess who... Oh, my inner goddess is smirking and is so happy with my decision. It's like, who the fuck talks like that?
You lost me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so bizarre.
I'm already out for this film.
I definitely think that there will be a lot more book-to-movie adaptations, especially with, you know, like I said, the young adult, a lot of, you know, the dystopian thing, because dystopia is popular right now. You know, they've even made movies out of books that... have not only just come out, but been around for a while. Ender's Game was a recent one. That book's been around a while. Maze Runner's been around a while.
It seems like there. It's like Divergent.
Divergent and the Hunger Game stuff, those are newer books, you know, the last 10 years. But, you know, they've got so many to choose from that I could definitely see this being a trend that continues. If they make money off of it, why would they have any reason to stop?
It's a good point. I mean... It seems like they worm their way in. Maybe worm's a pretty harsh word. But they worm their way in with the teenage crowd that they know, okay, they need something to do on a Thursday night. They're going to go to the opening. We're going to make a lot of money that opening weekend. And if we make a lot of money opening weekend, we're going to get good buzz, good word of mouth. We're going to continue to make money. We're going to sell the DVD and the Blu-ray over again and the digital download. I mean, that's the formula, whether it's good or whether the film is good or not. I mean, it's a kind of a dangerous formula at that. I'm not saying that Hollywood doesn't use it themselves with, you know, summer blockbusters. I'm not saying everyone is great or even decent, but...
One thing I do have to give, though, is the marketing that they used behind the 50 Shades of Grey thing was actually pretty brilliant. Whoever they is, approached Beyonce and asked her to do a remix version of her song Crazy in Love, which she... released the 15-second teaser trailer on her Instagram, which I don't know how many followers she has on Instagram and or Twitter, but
probably
millions.
Yeah.
So, you know, they all see it and then they share it.
I'm going to look that up.
All of a sudden you have
do the due diligence on that.
You know, all of a sudden you have all these people and then they tell their friends who tell their friends and then, you know, pretty much everybody.
And look at us. We're talking about it here on the podcast.
There we go. Right? But, you know, and that was just the teaser. And then they were doing a countdown, like 2 more weeks until the trailer, 1 more week, 5 more days, 3 more days, you know, like they were almost being teasing, which is in line with, you know, the ideas behind part of the book. But, you know, like that was actually pretty darn smart for them to use her to.
Right. And just for your knowledge, Beyonce has 14,550,306 followers on Instagram.
Oh my god, that's painful.
And she follows absolutely nobody else.
Well, of course.
I always find that funny.
And that's just Instagram? That's not even that's like Instagram. Looking at Twitter or whatever?
Twitter, so, I'll get the intelligence on the Twitter numbers here.
Thank you, secret agent.
Exactly. But you know, I guess if it's big business, they'll continue to do it. And obviously, this is not the real Beyonce because she only has 8 followers. Oh, no, no, no. This is right. She's actually following people on Twitter. So there's that. She has 13.5 million followers on Twitter. So it seems Instagram is a bit more popular than the Twitter is here. And I want to see who she's following here. Who do you think she's following? We're going to play a little game of who's Beyonce following. If you can get...
Jay-Z.
Three people, I'll give you kudos.
Jay-Z.
No.
Really?
Really, yeah. No.
Her sister.
Solange.
Mm-hmm.
Solange, yeah.
Any of the other Destiny children?
You can't name them?
Michelle Williams?
Yes.
And I don't know the third one.
Oh, I can't give you kudos for that. But yeah, she is following the other one, Kelly Rowland.
Kelly Usher. Rowland, that's right.
Usher's on there. She's following herself and her. She's following her website, I guess you could say. Mariah Carey is one of them, and two other I do not know. So there's your breakdown for Beyonce. We'll be back after some words about the podcast to do our movie reviews.
I was like, can we please get back to that?
Yes. Just after this, so hang on, hang tight. We'll be back with Hercules, Lucy, and the Purge Anarchy right after this. We want to thank you for supporting the Lex Podcast by downloading and listening, but also support rantemradio.com. That is where the home of the Lex Podcast is. That's rantemradio.com. They have lots of other cool shows on there. Wrestling, comic books, other movie reviews besides ours. And also, you can contact myself by following me on Twitter at @_lexicon. Or you can send me an email, lexmarston@gmail.com, lexmarston@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. If you like the podcast, the best way you can help us is to share it with friends. Just click share on Facebook or Twitter or wherever else you socialize, and that helps us out a lot. So thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the podcast. Our first film of the show is Hercules, a movie that questions the myth and reality of the alleged son of Zeus. Dwayne The Rock Johnson plays Hercules as he roams Greece for mercenary missions with his band of skilled thugs, all in an attempt to earn enough gold to retire in solitary. When Hercules is double-crossed, however, he must face his own mythology and become the half-god, half-mortal the legend speaks of. The film reeks of Hollywood's summer blockbuster with pedestrian one-liners and a less-than-inspiring performance from Dwayne. But it's a fun jaunt nonetheless. 3 out of 5 for Hercules, a film that you were not wanting to see at all. In fact, you have a tendency to whine about the films that you don't want to see.
Totally. Like, why not? Like, you know, I do have to give kudos to this whole thing because... it is definitely, you know, how many movies have I whined about, and then I come back and I'm
almost
like...
almost every single one. Almost every single one you've whined about, like vocally to me, whined about.
I don't want
to
go see this.
Yeah, or you're,
like,
you're...
I liked it.
It's almost like you're stomping out the door when you're about to go see
pretty
it.
Pretty much, yeah.
You act like a child, but totally. You come back and you admit that...
And you want to know what I think it is? The trailers blow.
Okay, this
there is nothing to hook me in and make me want to see it.
This is a case of a trailer not telling a good story about what this film is about at all. Because the trailer that we saw it a few times, was... it's funny because in the film, what we saw in the trailers didn't happen. It doesn't...
Right.
It shows it and everything like that, but it doesn't...
Like
it's myth.
Yeah.
It's a myth. And the whole thing about this movie, which I liked a lot, which is actually pretty interesting, is the myth of Hercules and what actually happened. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, he fought a Hydra, but it was people in a Hydra suit.
Right.
But nobody else knows that besides him and this king. And so the whole film is kind of him not really caring about the legend at all.
He basically, he doesn't say, oh no, that's not true. He lets people believe right. what they want.
He uses it to his advantage right. for him and his band of thugs to do these mercenary missions to fetch gold. Again, like I said, to retire. I forgot what he said, like the Black Sea.
Black Sea, I think, is where something they want like to that. Retire.
Yeah. And so, you know, he uses it to his advantage, but also he doesn't really care about it. It's not like he believes his own myth or whatever. Or maybe he just doesn't want to think about it. But the whole point of the film is, and by the end, is to get him to think about it and confront that myth and whether it's true or not. And, you know, that's the whole fun of the film is seeing what was real, what wasn't real, and seeing what he can do about it. But it's obvious that his in the very first scene when he shows up to rescue this his nephew, mm-hmm. and he makes it look like he's doing all the work.
Yeah, in reality, he's got all of his little thugs, as you keep referring to them.
Yeah, his band of merry men,
his misfits. you know, you've got the chick who's pretty awesome with a bow and arrow. You've right. got this guy who's flinging little like. Almost like ninja stars at people, mm-hmm. and then, you know, so it's all kind of hidden, so to these people that he's speaking to, it does appear like he's doing all this, when in reality he just, like, you know, clotheslines one guy.
Right. The trailer makes this film look very lame, like, not interesting at all, just a bunch of action
baffles
scenes.
That's me, like, no wonder I whine and bitch and moan about going to see it. Like, the trailer, like I said, the purpose of a trailer is to, like, hook you and reel you in, make you want to come see more.
Right, but let's use this to learn your lesson as far as should you take the trailer.
Right, and you know, it's a very good don't judge a book by its cover thing, but still, like, it almost makes me angry because do they not realize that unless you get a bunch of people that go opening weekend or whatever and say, oh my god, it was good, don't believe the trailer, go see it. If I see it on its last day in theater... Like, I can't use word of mouth and tell my friends, go see it. It's great.
I think you and I both agree that the film is better than the trailer let on.
Yeah, it's still not perfect, though.
No, but it's better than the trailer let on. But I think what they were going for was they were trying to rope in those people who care more about the 3D action scenes than anything else. Because I think if they tried to put a trailer together using what the film has, it would look kind of dopey in a way. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it all of a sudden it becomes, you know, Hercules is a phony. And
that's not even what it is.
Well, no, but if you were to splice together a trailer, like, if you were trying to tell the other side of the story, it would be hard to tell that story. Anyway.
It didn't hook me, though, the trailer.
No.
So, yeah, I complained. Deal with it. I will not stop complaining. The movies that are coming out this week, I don't want to go see.
Oh, gosh. Oh man!
But that is a later discussion.
Yeah, it is.
Carry on.
Okay, so there are action scenes in this film,
and I feel like they were pretty decent. I mean,
but
the cool thing about the
later action scenes, maybe not the very first one. Even the first one was cool because it was telling the story of he's using his guys to make him look better. But when they get the when they come across this king who has a job for them, and it's basically train my farmers to be soldiers so that I can fight against Rhesus,
mm-hmm.
which is supposedly this centaur. He says, you know, train my guys and help them get there. The first battle that they have...
it's like a joke.
It was
like
a joke.
These guys are not ready.
Right, it was a joke, but also what's cool about it is the strategic thing of the battles. It's not... Let's rush out and just collide.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
All right, you guys are not warriors. We're going to go into formation. You need to become the shield.
Exactly. Shield for your king.
Don't go out there and attack them because you're not going to win. Make them come to you mm-hmm. and fight them that way. And then the second battle that they have when they actually get to Rhesus.
It's actually pretty cool.
It is very cool. They have this whole formation, and it works, and, you know, it's pretty damn cool. It was fun to watch that. Therefore, the strategic...
Because there were three. There was the first one where they get mowed over, the second one where they go to the village looking for Rhesus, and then the people that they're there to try and help are the ones that attack them. The guys with, like, the crazy body paint
tattoos. I thought that was the first battle.
No, that was the second one. There was another one prior to that, which is why they do more training.
Okay.
And then there's the big one at the end with the with Rhesus and the centaurs.
Yeah, which is funny because that goes along with the rest of the film about what's real and what's mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And when that reveal happens, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So the film's faults, I thought a lot of the camera work was shoddy. And I know that's kind of weird to say. And I know it's kind of a, if you're really looking for it, you'll find it. If not, you won't. But I felt like when they did kind of the wide, bigger scope shots, the camera would move. Like, it was weird. It wasn't like a smooth shot.
A bird's eye kind of.
Yeah, it wasn't a very smooth, you know, and so that kind of made it feel maybe not as highly produced as you'd expect a summer blockbuster to be.
Right.
I thought there were one-liners in the film. I mean, they weren't too offensive, but they're there.
I actually liked that, though.
I get it. You know,
this is
a
serious film. You have to have
some
levity. To be having this battle and...
Yeah.
Well, don't just stand there. Kill somebody. You know, I don't know. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah. It
was appropriately placed.
Yeah, and it did get chuckles in my theater, but I didn't laugh.
I laughed a couple times.
Okay. Other faults in the film I found...
You had a thing with the accent.
This is just a thing in Hollywood, I guess, where everybody else in the film has an accent except for the main guy.
Not only that, but they're in Greece. Why are they British accents?
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
You saw the movie first, and you did your written review on Facebook. I read it, and I saw that that was one of your cons. So I went into it kind of like, is that going to bother me? Is it not? And it's one of those things that with, like, very little... You know, there are those people that they were born in the UK, but they've been in the US for so long that their accent is, like, hardly there. They could have even done that. He could have very easily added a little bit of something to make it seem like he had a bit more of an accent. And it's like they didn't even try.
Right. Dwayne just does a normal accent, talks in his normal voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard his normal voice several times before. Yeah, it's just like special. That. And so his performance is okay.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, no pun intended. You could have put a rock there and it would probably do just as good of a job as he did.
Okay.
He didn't bring anything special. I mean, he looks good. He's big, strong.
But even then, like, I don't know. I was expecting, like, him to be bigger and, like, even not necessarily muscle big, but... He was, like, the same height as some of the other guys that he was around. It's like, he's...
I was noticing
mind,
that.
Like, Hercules is supposed to be this big, massive thing.
Right. In movies, one of the tricks they do for, you know, taller people or shorter people, if it's a taller person, they shoot them from the floor up to get that sense of towering. Or they'll shoot them from the top down if they're shorter. Because, you know, that's the way it does. But they didn't... You're right. They didn't do it. They shot everything on level. Or they shot it from up above.
Yeah, to where you are kind of looking down. And you can see, like, okay, that dude's only, like, 3 inches shorter.
Right. So, and they even make a joke in the film about that, though. Because, like, it was the big legend. Oh, I thought it would be bigger, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they do reference it, I guess. But, you know, again, it's not an offensive role. Or performance, it's just kind of there, and it's fine.
Yeah,
no harm done. It's just not gonna win any awards or anything like that. So, but I thought the performance by I need to get up the names here because it's Greece, and I don't do well with the names. But the king, Hercules is king, not King Coitus. Which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, me too. I was like, am I hearing that right?
Is he saying Curtis, like coitus? Or is it coitus? Or is it coitus? Or...
I thought it was coitus, like C-O-T-I-S.
I looked
not
up...
Not coitus as in,
it's
like,
C-O-T-
sex.
It's C-O-T-Y-S, I believe, is how they spell it. But the King Eurystheus... I guess, played by Joseph Fiennes. You know, I like Joseph Fiennes. He's a weird looking dude, and he performs weird, but that's also cool because it's different. He was in American Horror Story Asylum, and I thought he did a fantastic job playing the role of a priest in that. So, you know, that was cool. I found bits and pieces that I liked, and the story kept moving. It's only an hour and a half long, right? Yeah. Very short film.
But I feel like the pacing and everything, like, it worked.
Yeah, it rolled right along.
It wasn't too short. It wasn't too long. I feel like it was just right.
Yeah, they didn't spend multiple days planning out this or...
Yeah.
You know, they didn't show that, which, you know, I guess
maybe they could have thrown a montage scene in there or something to show that time has passed.
Or training the soldiers a bit more or something like that. But again, it's an enjoyable film if you're just going in not knowing what to expect. I think you're going to be caught off guard with some of its intelligence. As far as the strategy from the battlefield goes, I thought that was awesome.
And I have to ask you, because as I've mentioned before, I'm one of those that I will literally sit in the theater until all of the credits are done, the lights come on, and I'm the only one in there.
I'm jetting as soon as I see the first name.
The very beginning of the film opens up with Hercules' nephew narrating the story of him doing these different tasks. At the end, during the credits, it's actually kind of like comic book style. You see the retelling of the stories with the help of his thugs. So see that it wasn't really him just like in the murky water by himself, but you see that, you know, she was shooting the arrow and he was flinging daggers he was jumping from the tree and with the boar. You know, it was a tag team thing, and so it was kind of cool to see that because it's like it tied that together to show that, you know, he didn't do these things alone. He did have that help.
So if you still have yet to see it,
stay
during
for the
credits. Okay.
At least until the main credits roll of, you know, the black screen with the white, you know, writing.
Okay.
But it was definitely cool to see that. So you gave it a 3.
3 out of 5 for me. Yeah.
I would actually agree with your rating because, again, it's nothing fantastic, nothing special, not the worst thing we've seen, but definitely don't let the trailer fool you. I mean, if it's something that you're even a little bit intrigued or interested, go see it.
At an hour and a half, which is pretty much as short as you're going to see a movie, I have to recommend it. If it were a 2-hour movie, I probably wouldn't recommend it, but if it's only going to take an hour and a half of your life away, give it a shot at an hour and a half. So, but yeah, on to our next film.
Writer-director Luc Besson from The Fifth Element directs Scarlett Johansson, known for Avengers, The Island, in a film that messes with your mind and leaves you wondering where human potential lies. Lucy is an American woman attending school in Asia, and her sleazy boyfriend ropes her into delivering a briefcase to a mob boss, and before she knows it, she is roped into a drug scene as a mule. The drugs that have been stored in her abdomen begin to leak into her body, and this allows her mind to unlock more of its potential. She develops the use of a larger percentage of her brain capacity and uses these abilities that result from this to try and share her knowledge, and by this we mean literally all the world's knowledge, with a group of scientists led by Morgan Freeman. Everybody knows him, so I'm not going to list his movies, but this film is really awesome in its visuals, and I really like the filming technique, but it's one of those things that, like, I'm not even 100% sure what the plot was, because it's kind of everywhere. It's a film that you enjoy in the heat of the moment, but later, upon reflection, you're kind of scratching your head wondering, WTF. I even had a coworker today, hey, you saw that movie, right? What'd you think of it? What's it about? Well...
Listen to the podcast.
it wasn't even that. It was just like...
I know.
And I even told her exactly what I just said, that when you're watching it, it's awesome. You're like so in the moment and everything, but I'm not even sure how to describe it to you because...
You came home from this movie. You saw it before I did. You came home saying it was awesome.
Yeah, and I still feel that way.
Like it were a 4.5 rating out of 5.
Oh, is that how you took it based on my...
Yeah, I mean, that's your reaction. That's your level of your reaction. You were digging it quite hard, and I was like... Okay, we'll see what it is. I took it with a grain of salt because I know that we have differences in opinions.
We have totally different movie thoughts and opinions and feelings and everything, so I was curious to know how you were going to react to it.
Right. And so I went in to see it And I like Scarlett Johansson. She's not on my list of people that I don't want to see. And I did go into this film not wanting to look into it. So, you know, I sat down and was open for anything. But even then, I'm still kind of like, I felt I got more than I bargained for still, even expecting the weirdest stuff ever. I didn't know going into this film that this was the guy who did The Fifth Element. I didn't know this was the guy who did all these, you know, more eclectic films.
I had to look that up as well.
I didn't know he was the one that did all these eclectic films. But even going into it, I was just like, okay, I can suspend disbelief. If you want to know what this film is about, it's Wonder Woman on crack. Whereas Superman has kryptonite, what weakens him, Lucy needs drugs to stay powerful.
And it's not even that, though. What it is, because she even, when she contacts Morgan Freeman's character, who's a scientist who has been doing research and theorizing on human brain. And, you know, there's that myth that exists that we only use 10% of our brain. It's not actually that we use 10% of our brain. When that was brought up way back in the 60s by the, I like to refer to them as the psycho circle, meaning psychiatrists, psychologists, all of that. They were saying at that time that what they had figured out so far is that we use 10% of our intellectual capacity. Somehow that went off with we only use 10% of our brains. The whole premise of this is it's capacity. So he's saying at 20% brain capacity, we may be able to do these things. At 30%, maybe these. At 40, this. Beyond that, we're really not sure. Well, Lucy contacts him to say, your research is correct. I'm proof. I'm dying as well, so I want to meet with you so that I can tell you everything that I have discovered before I die. Share my knowledge with you. So she needs these drugs to stay alive long enough, because she already knows that her body is shutting down.
Right. And it's just, it, the way it is, though, it's kind of like, okay, when you get to 10%, you get to 20%, you know, okay, she can read stuff really fast and retain knowledge and you know, do all this and that. Okay. 30%, 40%, she starts, you know, what is it? Telekinesis. She starts moving things around, and she can make things float in the air, and she can, and it's kind of like, okay, all right, I'm still with you. All right, let's buckle in. And then it's just like she starts disappear, like she starts evaporating, and it's just like, what the hell? Why would she evaporate?
You listen? Were you like following along to the Morgan Freeman
thing? As much as I could, yeah. I mean, I'm no Harvard student.
When you get to a certain percentage of being able to use your brain's capacity, you can control your body.
Yeah, exactly.
Meaning you can change your appearance,
but she couldn't
control
her body.
Because you can change your molecules and this and that. So basically she was like,
she had no control over it.
And that's why she consumed more of the drugs, was to kind of bring herself.
It was nuts, man. And by the end of the film, hey, spoilers. Straight up spoilers right now. So if you don't want to see spoilers,
yeah,
skip a couple of minutes ahead. But she straight up turns into a supercomputer. Like, she turns into this black spiked monolith, and she turns into a USB thumb drive.
She stores all of her knowledge of the world and the universe onto it, yes.
I didn't like that. I mean, I didn't like where, like, the first half was okay. Okay, I can get with it.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you describe this movie to somebody?
Exactly. It's just, it's nuts.
She has
on top
drugs.
Of nuts.
She turns into this computer-ish thing. She goes after the other drug mules to get the drugs back so she can consume them to stay alive long enough to give all this knowledge to this scientist. Like, why?
There's a much cooler film in this film.
Yeah.
That they didn't even explore. She could have been a franchise.
Yeah, but I think, like, seriously, the whole thing of it, though, is I can see my death. I'm dying. I have less than 24
hours. She would be a cool X-Man. She's like Jean Grey, kind of, in the sense of she can, like, control. But at the same time, she has her huge weakness, which is she needs this synthetic stuff. And you can go so many different places with that because they said it's essentially what pregnant women produce.
Pregnant women produce it in small quantities, right. And that's what gives the quote-unquote spark of life to the fetus around the six-week mark. And that's typically when you're pregnant, around 6 weeks is when you can hear a heartbeat.
Instead, what we get is this all of a sudden slapped together love interest with this.
I don't even think it was that. I think it was just her trying to retain some of her humanity because she could see it slipping away.
But the whole thing with him, he's attached to her.
Because she's as weird as all hell.
Well.
And he's like, I want to know what kind of craziness is going to happen here.
I guess so, but it was just, I don't know.
What I didn't like is that they all took it as like, yeah, this is normal. Okay, cool. Let's keep on working.
Yeah, there was a lot of where in real life there would be people questioning the situations going on.
A little bit more mass panic.
Yeah. Instead, we don't get that for the sake of time, I'm guessing.
Quite possibly.
You can't have every single thing she does be like someone stopping for 20 to 30 minutes and saying, wait a second, what's going on? Like, how is this possible? This doesn't make sense. Meanwhile, the audience is sitting there saying, how is this possible? This doesn't make sense. It's a movie. What I was saying to you when we discussed it, right when I got out, films set their own rules and boundaries. I felt that this did not set its own boundaries and rules to the point of we didn't have a basis to go off of. And that was the whole point of the film, because they didn't know what would happen when you get to 100%. But at the same time, it was just kind of like, you're along for the ride, whatever happens is all willy-nilly, and you just have to accept it as fact. And it's just kind of like, all right. And it's sad because the villain in the film is awesome.
He's pretty cool.
He did such a great job playing this sinister, evil businessman.
Part of me also
who doesn't
wonders,
speak
though,
English.
Like, what was the purpose? There were a couple of instances where Lucy could have killed him but left him alive. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what was the point of that?
She never got to take him out herself.
Well, it's like, was the whole purpose of keeping him alive, spoiler alert, so that he could be there right at the end when, you know, pointing a gun at her and then all of a sudden she's gone?
Yeah, exactly. Just, I mean,
like,
this,
you know, really, why?
Yeah, this why? Was, I mean, it's
if you don't think too much, this is an awesome film.
But that's the thing. That's the problem with the film. I felt like whoever wrote this thought too much. And they
and
were
he
just
was
like,
the writer slash director.
Right.
So it's one of those things. It's like, should he have maybe stuck? The directing of it, I thought, was great. I liked the angles. I liked the way that the, you know, people interacted with each other.
It was okay. It was okay. Let's talk about the splicing in of nature.
That was probably my biggest annoyance.
So in the beginning of the film, Morgan Freeman is giving his speech to this, I don't know,
basically he's at like a college lecture room in Paris talking to a bunch of, you know, college students and some of the faculty. It's like he's a guest lecturer, if you will.
Right. So he's talking about nature, and he's talking about humans and all that, and he's talking about what happens with this and that, and they'll show like animals in the wild doing things that he's directly talking about.
When Lucy is being taken in the hotel up there,
it shows this cheetah
who is like stalking this gazelle, and then you see the chase, and then you see the cheetah has the gazelle by its broken neck and is dragging it away to eat it. And this is little like 2 to 3 second clips of this interspliced in with the film. So you see Lucy's being, you know, herded along by these thugs. Cheetah's chasing the gazelle. You see Lucy's being, like, thrust to the villain, and you see the cheetah with the gazelle in its, you know, mouth. It was super bizarre, but once we got past that, like, I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It didn't really last. I mean, I think they did it a few other times, and maybe that was it. But, I mean, they splice these in, and it just feels so out of place. I don't mind filmmakers trying to do something. Like, I don't mind them experimenting with new ways to film and edit film, but I don't think this hit quite the way maybe he was expecting it to, he being the director writer, but I think Scarlett did a fantastic job with what she was given and the role that she had to play. I mean, this is a person who probably didn't have to do this. I mean, she's already got a superhero type role in the Avengers, and
Because what I liked about her is at the beginning, she is, like, super convincing that she's, like, so terrified and she thinks she's going to die.
I didn't like the whole she's in China being a student. She's, the way she is in the beginning of the film, she's as dumb as a box of rocks. And there's no, and her boyfriend is too. And they're in China. And it's like, and her roommate is dumb too. And it's kind of like, if you're going to China to study, you're probably not going to be that way.
And I'm not even 100% sure, like, what it was that she was studying or whatever, but the roommate, the actress who played the roommate actually was on America's Next Top Model and started out modeling.
Uh-huh.
So when I was seeing that scene and she was talking about the shoot that she went on, I took it as she's there to model. I'm not sure.
What's her name?
Annalee Tipton.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure if, you know, or what Lucy was there for, but she did mention to the sleazy boyfriend that she had to go study.
Yeah, it was for studies. So, yeah, it was, but, no doubt about that.
I feel like
it was a way to get the movie overseas, it seems.
I guess, but what I liked is that she was human, but like as soon as the drugs kick in.
Yeah, right. It was important.
She speaks much more intellectually and a lot more monotone, and she has no emotion, and she comments how she doesn't feel anything. She doesn't feel fear. She doesn't feel pain. And she's just speaking very flatly like I am right now.
it was important to contrast that.
She did that well.
Right.
So, but I liked it.
What was your final rating on it?
A 3.
3 out of 5?
Yeah.
I give it a 2.5 out of 5. And this was a film I actually was thinking about a 3, but I let it sink in for a bit more. And it's just, while it's not a horrible film, it's just, it took interesting risks that I don't think paid off. And I don't think that what they did extremely well was all that special in the first place. There's good performances from Scarlett Johansson and the man who plays Mr. Zhang. But outside of that, it's not something I'd care to watch again or even care to see a sequel of because of the way they took it. I think if they had taken it in a different way, I think Lucy would have been an awesome character to continue on.
But they actually did leave it. I mean,
everywhere,
basically. I am the atoms floating around. Exactly. So let's just say she couldn't rematerialize.
But that's the thing. I don't want to hear that story.
Make it happen.
Because I think there's something very human to what she was in kind of analyzing us as, you know, I remember my bones growing in my body, and I remember the cat we had when I was not even a year old and this and that. And it's like, these memories, there was something very human about her, even though she was kind of in an android state.
Right.
But now she is an android. She's a
computer.
See,
and I think the reason that I'm wanting to give it a 3 as opposed to a 2.5 is because I liked the visual and the style that was used. I liked seeing, you know, oh, okay, these are the drugs interacting with her bloodstream and, you know, going into her. Like, I kind of liked that.
That was whatever for me. My favorite part of the film was her in the beginning when she first gets the drugs in, and she's just like going around. Do you speak English?
Oh.
No, no, no. Do you speak English? Yeah, yeah. Take me to the hospital or whatever. And she goes into the hospital. She looks at the x-rays for the guy who's on the slab. They're like, you can't be in here. And she just shoots him, throws him off the slab. He wouldn't have survived anyway. Because of
climbs
this.
Up there and she's like, there are drugs in me, get them out. And
yeah,
like,
that was awesome.
And she's like, nope, just
that
do
was
it.
Great. Yeah.
And she's using the surgeon's phone to call her mom,
right,
telling about these memories as he's sitting there and he's undoing her stitches, reaching inside, pulling that out. And he's like, I have to sit you up. Is that okay? And she's like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Keeps on with her conversation.
Right. You know what it reminded me of in a shade in the vein of RoboCop? Because it's just like she's essentially a robot with her mannerisms, but there's still a human side to her in the sense that she calls her mom, she cries, and she says, I feel everything.
Although, if my daughter is saying this shit to me,
Yeah.
What the fuck kind of drugs are you doing, girl?
Yeah, that was really weird, too. But so I give it a 2.5 out of 5. You give it a 3. You liked it a little bit more than I do. I can't recommend this film.
I actually, when I was talking to my coworkers, said I kind of would like to go watch it one more time. I kind of wanted to watch it before we talked about it again, just that way I could be like, do my opinions still stand? But that didn't work
well,
out. Anything,
well, maybe we'll do another segment, a new segment, where we revisit a film or something like that. All right, the final film of the night. Here we go. The annual Purge is upon us once again in The Purge Anarchy, a sequel to last year's film about a 12-hour period of time where all crime is legal. This time around, we see three stories merge into one as three groups of people who find themselves stuck outside to survive the night. The Purge Anarchy, isn't about who is in the film, but rather what the film is about. There are no big-name stars in this picture, and that allows us to suspend our disbelief a bit more for what's already pretty uncanny yet interesting premise. The strong point of this film is examining human nature with the variable of no legal repercussions for their actions. I look forward to seeing more iterations of The Purge, as there are several different interesting routes they can go at this point. 3.5 out of 5. Neither one of us have seen the first one, and that's going to be a running theme with these reviews. We, before this, would only really see films we were interested in. And I was interested in The Purge, but not to the point of, I got to see that now. And so we both came into this not seeing the first one, but that I don't think that mattered at all. For me, I mean, they explained it.
I think to me, like, the sign of a good sequel is if you leave that sequel wanting to see the first one. That's a good thing. You know, I watched 21 Jump Street after having seen 22. And
you didn't like, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't like 21 Jump Street in comparison to 22. 22 is better. Anywho, I had already seen the Planet of the Apes films leading up to this one, things like that, but I actually wasn't aware until you had pointed it out to me that this was a sequel, hence them adding Anarchy to it to, you know, differentiate between the first one or whatever.
Which I believe, by the way, the first one focuses more on one family inside their house, so it doesn't really venture outside.
Okay.
So that's the premise of the first film, to my understanding. Again, I haven't seen it yet, but this focuses more on people trapped outside.
Yeah, people who, one guy, his intention was to go outside all along. There's a mother-daughter team who have barricaded themselves into their apartment, who, through no choice of their own, get dragged outside. And then there's a couple who are on their way home to find out that their car has been sabotaged. They break down on the side of the road, and they have to find safety.
Right.
And they end up all coming together when Sergeant, as they refer to him, is out, intentionally sees this mother-daughter duo being dragged outside, about to, you know, be killed, beat up, hit, whatever, and he decides to go to their aid. While he's doing that, the couple whose car broke down hide in his car, and then the five of them end up basically spending the rest of the evening trying to survive.
Right. It's a very interesting premise, like I said. The fact that, you know, all this crime is legal for this short period of time. And it does make you wonder about real life, about if this were actually a thing, who on our neighborhood would be out, who would be in, and not only that, would it actually prevent the unemployment rate from being as high, or would it prevent crime rate from being as high as they state in the film? So those are things that you kind of have to get past. If you can get past those questions and kind of whether or not this actually disturbs you or not, it doesn't disturb me because I've seen countless horror films that have much more twisted plots than this. And so for me, it was actually pretty interesting. For you, though, you said that you enjoyed the film, but you felt dirty afterwards.
I felt morally dirty.
Well, why though? Like, you still
because,
haven't explained
like,
to me why.
Like you just said, it really makes you kind of stop and think and wonder if this were reality, if this was what we had to deal with and live with for 12 hours once a year, what would that, and it's like, I mean, it's such an interesting thing because I would say, like, yeah, I'm going to barricade myself in, make sure me and my family are safe.
We'd be building a shelter underground.
If I could rob a bank and get away with it, would I? You know, like, there's, you know, things like that. Right. So I'm almost, like, disgusted with myself for even considering it.
Yeah.
But, because the thing is, this is set in 2023. And it mentions that this new founding fathers of America went into being 9 years prior,
mm-hmm.
which is 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And that this 2023 is the sixth annual purge. Mm-hmm. So 3 years after this new world order came into play, they started the purge.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of it too is like, could this happen? You know, it's 2014. Could this new world order come into effect where they decide we're going to do this? We're going to let people run rampant and be crazy.
Yeah.
We're going to let it happen and just see what happens. You know, like,
it's
disturbing
it's
on that
crazy.
Level.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Because this is one of those things to me that like could become reality. Nightmare on Elm Street. I know Freddy's not real. Friday the 13th. I know that that's not going to happen. So I'm able to suspend belief for those sorts of horror films. But knowing that this has the potential to become reality, I think, is what really gets me down to my core.
Well, the thing is, the belief of many horror filmmakers and the belief of me and myself is the scariest thing in the world is other people. Because they... I mean, you're not immortal, you know? They can do anything, anytime they want. Maybe, you know, there's going to be repercussions, but that's not going to stop them from doing stuff.
Right.
You've got, you know, we live in an area where a lot of people are very happy about their guns and stuff like that. You know, stuff that, it's not like they're going out and shooting people on a regular basis. Not everybody, at least. But who's to say that they wouldn't? You know, if mm-hmm. things were legal and stuff like
that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So, when you look at this whole premise, it's really screwed up. And it's funny because this is a very racial film. This is extremely racial film.
I don't even think it's race. I think it's a classist film. The
it's,
poor
it's
must
classes,
go.
It's classes, but underneath, it's racist. Because it's the rich old white people.
There were some rich black people in that room.
I didn't see
with
any.
With the old black or the old white lady. There was a very rich, covered in fur and jewels black lady too.
I admit I didn't see everybody. The majority of that room was old, rich white people and their sons
and
daughters.
Because even then, in the building, Ava and her daughter are black. Or at least mixed, because they are lighter skinned.
Hispanic.
Her neighbor was Hispanic. Her best friend was Hispanic. The owner of the little diner was white. So, I mean,
I'm not saying it's completely segregated. I'm just saying the new founding fathers, from what we saw, were old white guys, which is how it is, except for our president right now. The anti-New Founding Fathers was a militant black group. Every single one of them was black.
Which I totally got a vibe of, like, Malcolm X. You know, with, like, I don't know. That's kind of a vibe I got with hearing his little...
It's a cliche that's been seen before. If you've... Anybody listening has played the game Infamous... As you're going through the city, there's, like, the video will, like, TVs and the swords will cut out to this guy who's talking, you know, anti-government and this and that, you know, so it's...
It's like that, only, like, she is intentionally watching it on...
And the guy looks like Wesley Snipes
in
New Jack City. but it's, that's what I got from the film on a deeper level. But on the surface level... This is a game type movie. So you have your Hunger Games, you have The Running Man, or, you know, what have you. This, or Battle Royal, this is a game, in a sense. It's just a game with very high stakes and life or death situation. And I thought that the coolest thing about the film was that they didn't have any real big names in the film.
I think that kind of depends on your idea of, like, big names, though, because, like, the two that played the couple whose car was sabotaged, those were people I recognized.
Yeah, recognized, but not big names. Like, there was no Tom Cruise in this film. There was no, you know.
But I mean, I recognize they were 100% complete unknowns, like in Earth Tech.
No, I'm not saying that they're complete unknowns. I'm just saying that there's when you see it, like when we were watching Hercules, that was The Rock. You saw The Rock on screen, right?
Right.
It was a generic white guy that they found, you know, in Australia somewhere. This was someone you recognize to the point of you knew his name. And he wasn't necessarily Hercules all the time. He was The Rock sometimes.
Gotcha.
Where this is, you know, Zach Guilford is
Matt
probably...
Harrison.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest name. And that did kind of, for me, distract me because I like Friday Night Lights a lot. So, to me, he's Matt Saracen, and he doesn't differentiate his performances.
Yeah, no, like, he's always the same.
Yeah, he's always the same.
I thought that was kind of funny, too.
You know, which is...
I don't even watch the show to the level that you watched it, so...
I've watched it probably four or five times over.
Yeah, so aside from, like, I've seen maybe a total of four episodes over the course of the whole, you know,
But
series.
I like him, because he brings something complex to, even though he plays the same role.
It feels real. It doesn't feel like he's, you know, affecting a role.
He's a bit of a wiener.
Yeah, well,
and
world can't function without him.
Yeah, I thought the girl did a fantastic job playing her role, and I'll get her name so
Kylie
I don't dis
something.
Callie, I think her name in the film was Callie. Her name is Zoe Soule.
Oh, the daughter. Okay, I'm
yeah,
sorry. I thought you meant the actress who played Shane's girlfriend or wife or whatever.
Oh no. She was whatever. But
yeah, I was impressed by her.
She had a strong performance and played a very strong character, which was nice. But even, you know, all this crazy stuff is happening, they have the more complicated situations. Like when they go to the main lady, gosh, I really need to get the names
Ava.
Yeah, Ava's friend's house. When they get there and that whole situation, because you know, at least I knew, as soon as they came in there was something going on in there. There was something weird going on.
There was definite palpable tension.
There was tension going on, but it wasn't even to the point where I knew what was going to happen.
I figured that there had to be something about the car, because he kept asking about it.
I knew there was no
like
car
dodging.
The whole time, yeah.
See, and I didn't, because when he hands her the phone and they're in the alley and she calls and she's like, oh, and we're going to need the car. Is that a problem? And, you know, then it, like, cuts to him. I didn't think anything of it, but kind of makes me wonder, like, had she already hung up or was she just asking anyway and was basically like, I'll explain later. Don't question me.
Right.
So that was definitely kind of a shocker, and I felt a good way, a good shock.
Yeah, I mean, that whole scene in there, and I guess I won't say what happens, but that whole scene in there is cool. It's an old film trick, you know, lull the audience into a safe place and then turn everything upside down and move them along again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was interesting from that standpoint. The whole government side angle was something that was... intriguing, because we didn't know quite what was going on yet.
And I have to ask you, so the reason that Ava and Callie were pulled out of their home is because there's this guy in the back of a semi-truck who's got, like, a machine gun, and he's just, you know, door opens up, he shoots some people, door closes, right. They carry on.
Oh.
And it has, like, the government seal on it. And Sergeant, you know, shoots in there and ends up grazing his cheek. I totally thought that dude was, like, the president or something.
Uh-huh.
And that was meant to be, like, everybody is so fucked up in the world that even the president takes part in this and, you know, gallivants around and has fun. But they never really addressed that. So I'm guessing, I know that these were government trucks.
No, they addressed it.
They didn't address who he was specifically.
Not who he was specifically.
But they did address that the government has to help out in, you know, killing a little bit more, because... killing isn't as high as they were hoping it would be. But I was almost hoping that it would be somebody like up there that maybe we had seen in a flash at the beginning when they're showing, you know, some of the new Founding Father people on the TV and stuff like that. I was kind of almost hoping that they would point out that, like,
you know. It was just a representation of America. I mean, he had the American flag hat on, and he had the very chiseled American face, you know, the guy who looked like he was Secret Service, retired Secret Service or whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, they never really explained why he went after the two girls.
Yeah,
precisely.
When the, like, soldier people are collecting them, there is a comment made, "We got them for you, Big Daddy." Like, that was his
right.
call.
Right, his personal,
like,
purge.
That's why I was, you know, intrigued as well. Like, why? Because also that same truck literally chases them all over town.
The only thing I could think of.
At the friend's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why I thought, like, is this one of those influential people in government?
The one thing I could think of is they knew she was watching the videos of the anti-Newfound Fathers, and so they wanted to eliminate her in case she got any wise ideas going on.
Mm. I guess I could see that then.
You know, and it's not a masterpiece of a film, but it's entertaining. It's got a plot that continues to roll along as they're out there. It's got some very tense moments and you know, suspenseful situations. I think Frank Grillo, who does play the sergeant, you know,
I was impressed by
he plays his role well.
Yeah.
Again, he doesn't get too big. He doesn't try to overact or anything like that. He, you know, the only moment where he kind of overacts is in the end, and that's kind of an understandable situation.
Yeah, it's meant to be that way, I
right,
think.
Exactly, and he does a good job with that as well, and this is a guy I really never saw before or can remember seeing in something.
He's
been in
been
a lot.
In TV.
Yeah, especially lately he's
Him,
been in a lot.
Shane and Liz, those are the character names, they have all been on a lot of TV stuff. I had never seen the actors who played Ava and Callie in anything before that, you know, came to mind.
Yeah.
Because, like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, that's Matt Saracen. You know? Like, that's what jumped to my mind.
Right. So. The film has an overall creepy look to it as well.
Yeah, those creepers on the skateboards with the mask that says
right.
God.
Like, yeah, exactly. You don't know what their intention is the whole way through. At one point, I thought they might be the anti-Newfound Fathers.
Well, yeah, especially
trying to save them.
When they're in the van, they're like, we don't kill. We're not here to kill you. I was like, oh, yay, they've been saved. And it's like, oh,
they flipped
twist.
It around on you.
Yeah. We just want money.
Then the most creepy parts are with the rich people.
God, yeah.
And it's...
They're auctioning these people off like cattle.
Well, you know, in the beginning of the film, when the grandfather
mm-hmm.
goes away, and that whole scene, they don't show anything.
They imply.
Yeah, it's the implied violence tactic, which makes some films, you know, people come out and say, that film was really gory. Well, no, it wasn't. It just had a lot of implied violence
yeah.
and stuff. This isn't necessarily that. There was plenty of, you know,
bloodshed. Oh, yeah, there
bloodshed.
Was gore, for sure. But that particular scene was purely implied.
Right, but the whole way it was shot with...
like, oh, you know what's about to happen, too.
Well, even the filters they put on it, where the lights were... these seemed to glow more, and,
yeah,
you know...
Kind of ethereal.
Yeah, almost. Exactly. It was cool.
You know, they're in their posh living room mm-hmm. with the wall and the floors are all covered in plastic sheeting.
Right.
Mom, dad, the adult
Patrick
kids
Bateman style, yeah.
are, you know, standing there with their machetes and they've all, you know, they just look so prim and proper. She's in her little gold dress and her
they're all happy.
Perfect,
yeah, exactly.
He's in his, you know, suit and tie.
It's very
and,
creepy.
Yeah. And
very
grandpa's
creepy.
On his knees sitting, you know, in...
Well, he's sitting in a chair.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
he is in a chair. Not
yeah,
on a, okay.
He's in
well,
a chair.
He's you know sitting in a chair then in front of all of them,
he's
knowing that he's
there.
About to die.
Yeah, it's a very very creepy film. Mm-hmm. They use a lot of cool tactics with the cameras and filters and all that stuff. So I appreciate it from that point of view too. I mean, this is a franchise now that's going to keep rolling. I don't know if we'll get
you
one
think
every year.
That it's gonna. Continue on.
I don't know if we'll get one every year, but I do think there will be another one. And personally, I was thinking about this. Now, this is just me being, you know, fan fiction over here. I'd like for it to connect to another horror franchise.
Really? In what way?
In a sense of, okay, well, this is just a rough thought, but something like the Cenobites from Hellraiser are all of a sudden here because basically the Purge has turned at least the United States into hell on earth, you know, and you don't know what you unleashed by doing this because it's very morally, this is ridiculously corrupt. This is coming from the government and the reason why it happens and so on and so forth for, you know, I mean, this isn't unusual. I mean, in China, there's been euthanasia and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's not out of the question, but to link it to another horror franchise of essentially being so morally corrupt and bankrupt that you've unleashed hell on earth or you've brought some evil to the surface.
But then you're I mean, I know
I'm, that... I'm you know, get, I understand what makes this Purge special is what we talked about in the beginning is that
this
it could
really
happen. Yeah, exactly. So, but I'm saying if it gets to the point where okay, we've run out of ideas, we can kind of link it to that and say...
And, like,
okay.
Just to interject, like, that's why I didn't really like the Saw films. I thought that they were well-made, and I liked kind of the puzzle to it, but there could really be some sick fucker out there who, like, captures people, puts them in a house, and says, you have to go through all my little tasks if you want to live.
Right.
Like, that's... I think that, to me, like, that's the kind of horror that really gets to me, is because that could be reality.
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the sense that there could be a masked madman running around with a chainsaw killing people.
Who knows what's out in the country, you know?
But again, like Freddy Krueger and Jason, that's not real. It's not really going to happen. I can tolerate that.
Yeah.
But I do think that it would be interesting if they maybe tied it together with something else, but I just don't know if I personally could accept the leap from potential reality to, like, very obviously not ever gonna happen. Like, I don't know if that would be too abstract of a bridge to cross.
Right. I like the film. I give it a 3.5 out of 5. It was good to the point of, I think this is kind of horror, this is kind of suspense. I think pretty much anybody can watch it and find something to be entertained by in this. Whereas a lot of horror films, that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you give it out of 5? Still haven't thought of it, huh?
Well, I want to say that I'm wavering between a 2.5 and a 3. The reason for that, 2.5, and because it's not my cup of tea, it's not what I like, but I'm trying to not judge it and be too biased in that regard. So I'm leaning more towards 3 because it had a decent plot. It had a good story. It had good acting, you know. I don't really have any, like, major unanswered questions. So in terms of a film, like, it was good. It was done well.
Give it a 3 and not recommend it? Or based on moral standards, I guess?
Morally, I give this a 0. But I think I'm going to go ahead and go with a 3, but I would recommend it. I mean, it's a good film. It's
not... You just took something... You had exceptions with the content of the film, much like I did with Neighbors. But I, you know, whereas if I let my personal feelings about the content of the film completely overtake me, it would be a 1 out of 5. But realizing that other people do like this, in judging it on it, how it is, and it's you know, it can stand on its own. You know, it was a 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's still not very good.
You know, like guys said earlier, not wanting to watch these movies and stuff because trailers aren't decent or whatever. Having gone to and watched these, I have to realize that I'm not necessarily watching these because I want to. I'm watching them so that I can talk about them and give
an opinion.
But it
is for you. Yeah, I mean, we do it for the podcast, but it's also for your own good as well to kind of open up your eyes to films that maybe you would not have experienced before, like Chef or...
I mean, it's been 5.5, nearly 6 years. It's while I was pregnant with our son, I did take a film class at the college.
where we literally like dissected film and talked about camera angles and the types of stuff. So I'm trying to kind of like put my thought process back into that realm of, you know, consider the angles that were used. Was this, you know, good filming technique? You know, I'm trying to look at it more that way, more like an actual critic does or would do.
Right.
And not just like, yeah, I liked it, thumbs up, or boo, I hated it, thumbs down.
Yeah.
So because it had a good plot, at least in my opinion, in good acting and good story and all that, I'm going to keep it, I think, at a 3.
Okay. Yeah, so. That's good. So good week here. Just to give people a little taste of next week. The films that we will be reviewing
About to make some disgusted sounds, FYI.
Oh, gosh. Guardians of the Galaxy. Get On Up. Oh. The James Brown Story.
No Desire.
I think it's going to be a good film from what I've seen the trailers of. And
I haven't even seen a trailer yet.
And also, And So It Goes with Michael Douglas and Diane Keaton.
Boo.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, my wife needs to go to sleep now because she's cranky. But thanks for joining us, and join us again next week. Remember, if you have any suggestions, recommendations, or just general feedback, you can contact us at lexmarston@gmail.com. That's lexmarston@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. If you like the show, share it with your friends. That helps us out tremendously. Until next time, see you later, folks.
And remember, we do want recommendations on that comedy film to review.
Recommendations, right. Send it to the email address, or if you know how to get a hold of me otherwise, just, you know, message me or whatever. So, thank you very much again. So long, folks. Have a good night. Bye.